Not if his suspicions were correct. Rather than give Roke the satisfaction of coercing him, Hahn stepped forward. I'll volunteer. Beats another day of getting dirt under my fingernails. Roke looked at him in surprise, then narrowed his eyes in suspicion. I'll go along, too. Kip Duran stepped beside Hahn. Hahn felt a happy warmth swell up inside him, but he pushed it back. He didn't want to explain anything, not just yet. Chewbacca yowled in surprise, then grunted a question about Han's sanity. What did he say? Boss Roke asked. He's volunteering, too, Han said. Chewie let out an uncomfortable snort of denial, but made no further argument. One more volunteer, Roke said, then scanned the room. You, Clore. He pointed to a former prison worker who had done a lot of damage in Han's brawl. I'm taking one guard and you four. Suit up. Let's go. Roke didn't waste any time. By now, Hahn had grown used to pulling on his thermal suit and adjusting the breath mask. He switched on the power pack to start warmth pulsating through his suit. Chewbacca looked ridiculous with his suit's empty third sleeve limp and taped flat against his torso. Kip and Chewbacca kept staring at Hahn, wondering what he had in mind. Hahn moved his hands slightly to quell their questions for the time being. Of course he had a plan. One of the other guards, looking fidgety and uncomfortable, shifted a blaster rifle from shoulder to shoulder. Let's go, Boss Roke said, and clapped his hands. The four volunteers and the second guard lined up at the opening to the long metal chamber that housed the floating mine cars. They entered, and Boss Roke disengaged three cars from the long train. Roke and the guard sat up front while the others crammed into the remaining two cars. Hey, how about some of those infrared goggles? Hahn called. If there really is something out there, we'll need to be able to see where to run. Roke contemptuously put his own goggles over his eyes. You're expendable. He activated the guidance system on the front car's controls. The lights went out and the opposite door groaned open, flooding the compartment with cold, thin air. So much for that idea, Hahn said, then scrambled to put his breath mask in place. The unenthusiastic prisoner, Clore, groaned in dismay. Then the floating cars lurched into motion, gaining speed until they bulleted through the tunnels. The air whooshed as the car sped close to crumbling rock tubes from which generations of spice miners had peeled glitter-stim deposits. When the wind of their passage drowned out other noises, Kip leaned closer to Hahn, speaking through his breath mask. Okay. So tell me what we got ourselves into. Hahn shrugged. I have an idea, and if I'm right, we can all get out of this mess. Chewbacca made a skeptical sound, but ended in a question. Think about it, Chewie. People have been disappearing off and on from the same place. What if they found a way to escape? They've been working new tunnels, going into unexplored areas looking for spice. Then suddenly a bunch of them don't come back. You and I know there are plenty of abandoned shafts from the illicit miners that slip through Imperial security. This planet is honeycombed with entrances to the spice tunnels. Hahn paused, hoping they had already figured it out. Roke's teams usually have one guard and five blind prisoners. What if they came around the corner and suddenly found an opening to the surface, letting them see again? They could overpower the guard and make their way to freedom. Once Roke discovers the way out, though, he'll block it up, and we won't have another chance. If we're ever going to get out, if I'm ever going to get back and see Leia and the kids, I've got to try. I thought maybe this desperate gamble would be worth it. Sounds like a good chance, Kip said. I've been down here so long, I'm willing to try anything. Chewbacca agreed, but with somewhat less enthusiasm. They plunged down and down, whipping around sharp corners. Several times Hahn thought the rocky walls brushed within a handbreadth of his head, and he tried to crouch down inside the car. He didn't want to imagine what would happen if Chewbacca's head struck an outcropping at the speed they were moving. In the black spice mines, Hahn rapidly lost all conception of time. He had no idea how long they traveled, how far they went, or how fast the floating cars moved through the tunnels. Boss Roke brought the vehicle to a stop and called for the prisoners to dismount. The guard noisily unshouldered his blaster rifle. Hahn paid extra attention to the small noises he heard, building the best mental picture possible of where Boss Roke and the guard were standing at all times. That was something he would need to know if he had to make a quick escape. but they had gone down so deep now, he could not imagine finding a passage to the surface. "Follow me," Boss Roque said. "I want one prisoner up front ahead of me, and the guard taking the rear." Han heard a shove and a gasp, then someone stumbled forward. Was it Kip? No, from the unpleasant groan he determined that the point man would be Chlor, the former prison worker. Boss Roque rustled in his pack, withdrawing some piece of equipment. Han heard an electronic clicking and pinging sound. It was some sort of detector. Han strained his ears, listening to the tones change as Roque moved the scanner from side to side. "Spice all around us," Roque said, "just as we thought. And the concentration seems even higher up ahead. Move forward." Chlor stumbled into the blackness, followed by Boss Roque. Han walked blindly. He felt Kip taking hold of his waist, and he heard Chewbacca's breath echoing behind his breath mask. As they went farther, the tunnels grew colder and colder. Han's naked fingers crackled when he bent them. He turned up the heat in his suit, but the warmth comforted him little. The electronic clicks from Roque's detector grew louder. "Concentration increasing," he said. "These are some of the densest, freshest veins of spice we've ever uncovered. There'll be a lot more work for you prisoners to do." The detector clicked, and they shuffled ahead. Other than their own noises, the spice tunnel seemed a mouth of silence. Han thought he heard a sudden scuttling noise farther down the passage, something massive that moved, stopped, moved again, then slowly began to come back, as if stalking. Up front, Chlor muttered to himself, but Han heard Boss Roque shove him onward. "The reading gets stronger right up around the corner." Boss Roque's gravelly voice carried a childlike hint of excitement. "I'm going to have to recalibrate the sensor." Han heard the distant skittering sound again, but it seemed farther ahead. It wasn't a noise that anyone in their party had made. It sounded like sharp metal points ticking against glass. The tenor of shuffling human footsteps changed as they turned the corner. "Spice reading is off the scale," Boss Roque cried. Suddenly, Chlor screamed. "Hey," Roque said. Chlor screamed again, but the sound came from much deeper in the tunnel, as if something had yanked him away and fled, carrying him to a secret lair. "Where are—" Roque said. Then he, too, gave a startled shout. Han heard booted feet turning around, running back. Han nudged Kip aside, back the way they had come. "Watch yourself." Boss Roque stumbled into Han, then fell backward. Han reeled against the rocky wall that kept his balance. Roque clawed at the floor, desperate to flee. "Turn around," Han shouted to Kip, giving the young man a push toward the floating cars. "What is it?" he yelled to Boss Roque. He heard the pointy ticking sound again, moving closer, skittering like many sharp legs that ended in stiletto claws. Roque screamed, then gave an oof as the air was knocked out of him. Han heard a thud as the man hit the ground, but Roque clambered to his feet again, or at least to his knees, crawling forward. As Han started to run, Roque grabbed his leg and held on. Han tried to jerk free, shouting, "Stop it! We've got to get out of here!" But before Roque could let go, something behind him, something very large and very, very close, grabbed Roque and yanked him backward, breaking his grip. Roque's fingernails were like claws as he tried to grasp the slick fabric of Han's thermal suit, but with a quick whisking sound, he was dragged away down the tunnel, still gurgling and crying out. In the darkness, Han could see nothing at all. "Run!" Han shouted. Chewbacca roared, then plowed like a demolition vehicle into the guard behind him. Kip followed the Wookiee and leaped over the fallen man, but Han stumbled on him, sprawling flat on the broken rocky floor. Nobody could see anything. The guard scrambled to his knees and started thrashing and pummeling as if Han were the enemy. But Han, blinded and desperate, grabbed for something else. He snatched at the infrared goggles on the guard's face and pulled them free. The walls were closing in around him. The screams and sounds of panicked fleeing and the tick-tick noise of the approaching monstrous thing made claustrophobic thunder around him. The fallen guard's wail of sudden blindness and dismay was muffled by his breath mask. He clutched at Han, but Han knocked the breath mask free. The escaping oxygen made a whistling sound. The guard had to release Han to replace his mask. Han scrabbled forward. He had to see. They needed to find the floating car so they could get away. "Run, Chewie! Straight ahead! Make sure Kip goes with you!" He slapped the goggles over his head. He heard the scuttling, thumping sounds of the sharp, scampering legs again. Had an army of the things come to attack, or was it just one very large specimen with many legs? Looking through the goggles, he could see the bright blob of the fallen guard's infrared signature and the fleeing brilliant shapes of Kip and Chewbacca. He heard the thunder of hard, pointed legs coming back up the tunnel, stampeding down on them. The guard moved, clambered to his feet, and began stumbling behind Han, but the man could not see. He weaved back and forth and struck the wall, smacking his head on a hard outcropping. Running, monstrous feet came closer, like a patter of meteorites pelting the side of a ship. The guard screamed. Han turned around to watch him, but he saw nothing else in the blackness of the tunnel. No shape, no signature, no body heat from any creature. Nothing that was alive. The guard suddenly froze, as if a giant invisible hand had grabbed him from behind. Then Han saw, to his horror, the silhouette of a long, spindly leg reaching around in front of the guard's waist, and another one clipped over his shoulder, totally black, like a cutout from the infrared form of the guard. The man struggled and wailed. The guard yanked at something, his blaster rifle. Han gasped as a brilliant lance erupted in the pitch darkness, striking against the multi-legged thing, illuminating it for the shaved splinter of a heartbeat. Han saw what seemed to be a writhing mass of sharp twigs, a rat's nest of spindly legs and claws and fangs, intermixed with eyes, many, many eyes. Then the creature absorbed all the light, plunging the tunnels back into opaque blindness. The guard was lifted high in the air and turned around. Other shadows of the icicle legs wrapped around him. The glowing rectangle of the thermal suit's battery pack burned brilliantly in the infrared, but one of the sharp claws thrust into it like a stinger. Sparks flew into the darkness, leaving glimmers in front of Han's eyes. As Han ran backward, stumbling and tripping, he saw the man's infrared outline grow dim as he became as cold as his surroundings. The creature, whatever it was, must be draining or feeding on energy, on body heat or anything it could find in the cold, empty tunnels. "Keep running!" Han yelled, now that he could see the forms ahead. He made out a dim glow of warmth still radiating from the floating mine transport. "The car's right in front of you, Chewie. Get on it." The Wookiee bumped into the metal side of the vehicle and dragged himself to a stop. Chewbacca reached over and grabbed Kip, hauling him into the seat of the car. Then Han heard the clacking, scrambling footsteps behind him again, charging down the tunnel. He was the next one in line. He dashed ahead, gasping, tripping on debris, bumping into walls he could not see. His blood had turned to ice water. Chewbacca fumbled along the control panel of the floating mine car, trying to distinguish the buttons in the dark. Han kept running. The sounds of the sharp legs grew louder, rumbling. Han risked a glance over his shoulder. Though he could hear the thing charging at top speed after him, he could see nothing in the darkness, nothing at all. He reached the floating car and leaped in. "Just punch return, Chewie. Hit anything." Chewbacca hit the start button, and the car pivoted on its axis to move back in the direction they had come. The galloping sounds of the ice-pick-legged creature skittered faster and faster. The floating mine car picked up speed, but the creature kept coming behind it. Han still couldn't see it with the infrared goggles. With a loud spang, something struck the back car, rocking it sideways and slamming it against the side wall of the tunnel. Sparks flew as it scraped along the rocks, but the vehicle continued to accelerate. Han heard a hollow roar behind them, and then they left the noises farther and farther away. The creature ceased chasing them. The darkness rolled ahead like a great black vacuum. Han knew they were automatically heading back to the muster room. Chewbacca groaned and roared at him. Kip sat panting in terror. "What did you see?" Kip asked. "I don't know," Han said. "Nothing like I've ever seen before." Chewbacca chuffed in anger and annoyance and immense relief, and Han sighed. "I agree. This wasn't one of my smarter ideas." 12. Luke Skywalker showed Ganterus the wonders of the universe. He took his passenger into orbit in the modified shuttle, letting the man look down on the doomed planet of Eol Shah. The too close moon hung above the world like a raised fist against a curtain of stars. Igniting the shuttle's sublight engines, Luke soared into the blazing wonder of the Cauldron Nebula as Ganterus stared out the viewports into the chaotic glowing gases. Then they plunged down the endless other-dimensional hole through hyperspace, shortcutting across the galaxy, to Bespin. During the uneventful trip, Luke began telling Ganterus about the Force, about the training the candidates would undergo at the proposed Jedi Academy. Now that he had agreed to come along, Ganterus seemed willing and even eager to understand the strange echoes and feelings that had touched his mind throughout his life. The hum of the shuttle's powerful engines and the giddy, abstract swirls of hyperspace were conducive to beginning a few exercises for awakening Gantaris' potential. Luke was surprised at the man's powers of concentration, at how he could close his eyes and sink into his mind undistracted. Luke had been an impatient young man during his own Jedi training. Gantaris had had a much harsher upbringing, making him grim and enduring.
Reach out and feel your mind. Feel your body. Feel the universe surrounding you. The Force stretches around and through everything. Everything is a part of everything else.
Luke paid close attention to what he asked Gantaris to do. Obi-Wan Kenobi had spent some time training Luke, and Yoda had spent much more. But Luke had also undergone the abortive training of Jarus Sabaoth, as well as learning the powers of the dark side during his time with the resurrected Emperor. Luke could not forget that Obi-Wan's training had also transformed Anakin Skywalker into Darth Vader. Would it be worth bringing back the Jedi Knights if the price was the creation of another Vader? Gantaris's ominous dreams of a dark man who would show him power and then destroy him made Luke very uneasy. By the time Luke brought the shuttle out of hyperspace on an approach to Bespin, he thought Gantaris might be overwhelmed with new sights. But the stern man gawked out the viewports like a child awed by the roiling gas planet where Lando Calrissian had once run Cloud City. The sight of the swirling planet suddenly brought back some of the greatest horrors in Luke's life. He squeezed his eyes shut as he felt the sting of those memories. Gantaris, in the passenger compartment behind him, bent forward. "Is something wrong? I just sensed a strong flow of emotions from you." Luke blinked.
"You could detect that?"
Gantaris shrugged. "Now that you've taught me how to feel and how to listen, it came through very clearly. What's disturbing you? Are we in danger?" Luke opened his eyes and looked out at Bespin again. He thought of his friend Han Solo kidnapped and frozen in carbonite for delivery to Jabba the Hutt. He thought of the duel with Darth Vader on the catwalks of Cloud City that had cost Luke his hand. And worst of all, he recalled Vader's deep voice pronouncing his terrible message. "Luke, I am your father." Luke shuddered, but he turned to look back into Gantaris's dark eyes.
"I have powerful memories of this place."
Gantaris kept his silence, asking no further questions. Airborne mining installations rode Bespin's wind currents. Floating automated refineries, storage tanks bobbing above the clouds,